So sometimes people ask me, you know, what I think about the state of the world. I'm going on arms round, people stop me and ask me what I think about the state of the world. Say, well, yeah, it's... And do I make any public statements about, you know, the hot spots, Ukraine, Gaza? And these are the ones that get the headlines, but if you just scan a little wider, you can see Sudan is also a terrible horror story. Ethiopia, there's been a civil war. Yemen, Myanmar, you've got a whole civil war, brutality. Xinjiang, China, brutalization of the Uyghur minority. I mean, and this is just without really searching. You know, so how much can you take, you know? What do I say? It's bad. Do I think it's good? No, I don't think it's good. It's bad. And then what? What are you going to do about it? So I hope people do whatever can be done. But I also feel personally, you know, I was walking around yesterday. It's quite a beautiful day here, and somebody took me out to show me a piece of local woodland which has got bluebells and these beautiful oilseed rape plants which have a bright yellow, and there's very soft rolling countryside slopes and nice little old cottages and woodland with bluebells in it. Quite idyllic, you know. We walk around, and here I'm walking around this, and as I'm walking around I'm thinking, what must it be like to have a bomb coming over and a big shell landing in that and blowing it up? What must it be like to be living in a situation where the skies aflame with missiles? What must it be like if I'm looking at that little cottage and a drone lands on it and blows it to pieces? What would it be like if a whole troop of armed men came rushing over that hillside with machine guns? So yeah, it stays with me. And as I looked at that, I thought, I guess if I was there, I'd be in that, and I'd be dealing with that. Yeah. And if I was in a position where I could pull a lever and say stop, I'd be doing that. If I was in a place where I could say, please, could you make them stop? And they would listen to me, I'd do that. Yeah. And I hope that all the various protests and petitions and so forth, which I can totally sympathise with and give my yes to, hope they are effective. Yeah. But, you know, when you get to the big picture, I'm afraid this is very much part of human nature. It's brutality, grasping at territory, grasping at fear of others, hatred, aversion, and it just keeps ricocheting around. When we look at some of the most transformative occasions, you know, where, for example, after the Second World War, when Japan had been very aggressive and brutal, the army and so forth, under this kind of crazy nationalism, just as the German political machine had got intoxicated with its own nationalism, same kind of disease. And once the mind is intoxicated, there is no evil it will not do. And that was being played out. Once the mind is intoxicated with views and opinions, with mine and theirs, then there is no evil it will not do. Okay, you can say the Germans are bad guys, Japanese are bad guys, but before it was French were bad guys, the British are bad guys. Just pass it around. It's not a national characteristic. It's the nature of human beings, the intoxicated mind. And after the Second World War, then, interestingly enough, they were kind of concerned that Japan had been pretty violent to even just make it a subjugated nation, not an independent nation, and whether it should be allowed to be an independent nation because it was completely, you know, surrendered completely, given up completely. So what do we do with it? And I think it was the Prime Minister or President of Sri Lanka said, you know, because he was a Buddhist, you know, the famous line, hatred doesn't stop through hatred, it's only through love hatred is ceased. And he felt that the best thing to do was to be more loving. Not to take revenge, but just to be more loving, to follow the Dhamma. And so people respected it, said, you know, these people come out of their delusion, come out of their craziness, let's support it. And so Japan was allowed to be an independent nation and has been peaceful, law-abiding, peaceful member of the family of nations ever since. Same with Germany, which you thought after the wars between Germany and France, which have been going on for First World War, Second World War, before that Franco-Prussian War, before that Napoleonic War, before that the Empire, Holy Roman Empire versus the French. It'd been going for 500 years at least, this war between these two political entities. You thought these people, they could never possibly ever have a rapprochement. They're always going to be fighting and hating each other, which is what happened after the 1918 war. Then the French demanded a lot of reparations, which meant that the Germans felt really they'd been treated very unfairly, and that supported the rise of Hitler. But after this Second World War, he said, let's look, we just got to be friends. We'll just, you know, everybody's hurt everybody, everybody's slaughtered everybody, everybody's lost their friends and parents. We've all hurt each other. Now is the time to get out of this. The only thing we can do is form some kind of union. So we softened the boundary between us. So they started this thing called the Europe, it's now called the European Union, which of course has its problems, but it doesn't create war, internal war, which has been going on in Europe for 2,000 years at least. It stopped that. So, you know, that's the story, isn't it? At what point does it come available whereby warring nations say, you know, this is enough, we just got to, you know, can we accept the amount of horror that these people have generated for us and say, enough, we're not going to cause revenge? So, you know, my piece as a Buddhist monk, with monks are the people who stand at the edge of the forest. We don't actually go into the city. Even if physically we go into the city, psychologically we don't go into the city. Physically we go into the city to see people or whatever, but we stay in the heart, we stay in the forest. Yeah. So we're those who try to bring the forest into the city. The qualities of the forest, the shelter, the stability, the naturalness into the city. Yeah. So we feel like we stand at the edge of the village so that people can come and see us, but we don't participate in the political, economic pros and cons. If we look in the life of the Buddha, some of his chief disciples were kings, and kings basically did what kings did, which was they went out and slaughtered other kings. And that was part of the duty of a king, was to have his armies go out and attack the people in the next state. So they were doing this. They were his disciples, you know, and he didn't, you know, he said, okay, didn't approve of it. But at the same time, he'd say, you know, this will not lead to your welfare. And because he didn't have a position, they would actually come and seek him out because he was a neutral, open presence. And they say, well, and rather than dealing with the topical issues, saying, well, the topic of the samana is to say, what's happening in your heart? Do you feel frightened? Do you feel angry? Do you feel upset? Do you feel guilty? Do you feel people have done you wrong? Well, this is the same for everybody. Let's deal with it. And in these times, I think, because there is a lot of news and noteworthy and well-meaning organizations who look after, try to give attention to these problems in the world, I think, okay, fine, good, may you be well, maybe they're helpful. I'm going to do this bit, which is trying to retain the light of humanity and also giving people some practical support to deal with the emotional impact of receiving so much shock and horror every day, which I do, and I'm sure you do. So many things we feel shocked, horrified, disappointed by, really quite difficult to manage. So this itself takes energy. You know, the emotional energy that it takes to receive grief, hatred, delusion, you know, to receive it, it's like being hit. In order to receive it and stay intact, you have to kind of hold yourself together. Yeah? And there's an emotional impact that occurs when we receive bad news. And the citta is sensitive. The citta doesn't live inside an individual. The citta is a sensitive experience, and it expands to cover everything it's concerned with. Everything it's concerned with will probably be uncertain and painful to some degree. Therefore, there's going to be the shock. That shock takes energy. If you get a lot of shock, a lot of energy, and eventually you just shut down. And you get a low energy state, feeling hopeless and impotent. And then once you get hopeless and impotent, then you get negative states arise. And you sabotage programs. In other words, when you get a shock and an impact, your energy goes, your sense of solidity, your sense of wholeness and being able to contain things begins to weaken, and then you get kind of distracted, reactive. You know, you lose your balance. When you lose your balance, your poise, your equanimity, your steadiness, then unwholesome states easily take over. And unwholesome states will begin to corrode and damage the heart. Right? You know, if you sit with guilt and regret and hatred, it's going to damage your heart. These aren't just thoughts, these are energies that have a corrosive effect on your emotional world. If you too much of that, and you just become depressive, lack emotional resilience, you lose joy, you lose the qualities that can bring around regeneration. And we are fundamentally emotional beings. Intellect is an add-on. Before we had intellect, before we could see, before we could hear, before we could smell, before we were born, we were still emotional. We were still able to sense what was going on and respond and feel comfortable or uncomfortable. Even when we were in our mother's wombs, we would feel comfortable, or if the mother was having a bad time, we'd feel very anxious. You know, these aren't formed emotions. These are energetic patterns that run through the heart, and they produce what we call emotions. But these energetic heart energies rush through us. They must do, because that's the way we're built. When you get a lot of shock, grief, hopelessness, rage, despair, regret, that rushes through, those energies rush through the heart, and they are unwholesome. In other words, the heart is like sickened. Yeah, people die of broken hearts, literally. Yeah, depression is a sickness. It's not just a bad mood. that comes and goes. It sickens. Loneliness sickens. Yeah. Depravity sickens. The heart loses its buoyancy and clarity and radiance. Yeah. To the point in which we kind of accept that even. We call itself, I am a depressed person. Nobody's a depressed person. There's just depressed states that have caused the sickness of the heart. So receiving all this terrifying and disappointing and whatever news and impact, even just on your personal family level, means you're going to get these heart energies move through you. And they, if they're not compensating for, if they're not released and the heart isn't regenerated, you get sick. If you get sick, your heart gets sick, you no longer have the capacity to really bring forth the beauty, the power, the strength, the clarity that is part of your natural inheritance as a human being. So we can live in a society of people who are physically safe, they're not being bombed, but they're emotionally sickened. And why? Because this stuff is sickening. There's nothing wrong with them. You know, disease makes you sick. But the point is that the heart is able to regenerate and clear through Dhamma practice. So I'm saying, that's me, it's kind of like my peace. Because if we are strong, if we are capable, if we are loving, if we have the grand heart, my feeling is that really there's nothing we can't accomplish. If that health radiates out, surely this is going to bring around the best that there can be. And the idea is, first of all, that we begin to or enter that process of healing, regeneration and strengthening, and then we don't create the boundaries between the bad guys and the good guys and those and the shoulds and the shouldn'ts. We just keep that energy moving out. So the sickness is cured, and some places seem to be very sick. Because of that, it's important that we don't get sick. And it's important that their health that is regained can be generated and lived in and radiated. Yeah. And if we create boundaries between them and us, then those boundaries will block the transference of Dhamma, love, sanity, whatever you want to call it. Health, basic heart health. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, when we cultivate, just looking very simple model, you know, is we use these kind of foundations like mindfulness of body, basic foundation. Why is that always there? Why do I keep saying that time and time again? Because this is the thing that can hold. It doesn't solve anything, but it acts like a firm presence. Now your heart is something that's kind of very open, expansive, very vulnerable and very effective. It rises and sinks, it flutters, it shifts, it shakes, it pervades, it contracts, it goes high, it goes low. You want something that doesn't do that, just to act as a basic stabilizer. So you bring the two together, you see. So if the heart is able to contact that bodily presence, that acts as a kind of an anchor. That's a very important quality. It provides the quality. The heart picks up the sense of, this is the stable. This is the exciting, this is the maddening, this is the saddening, this is the stable. Okay, this is the painful, this is the problematic, this is the uncertain, this is the stable. Well, okay, keep all of it there. And depending on how difficult the emotion is, you might need to go much more to the stable, because this is really difficult to hold. So I need to hold stability very steadily in order to just be present with this emotional stuff, this heart stuff. Now, though I said citta occurs before sight, sound, touch and so forth, what we call the senses, this internal bodily sense, the sense of bodily presence, is fundamental to birth. When the citta comes into birth, it comes into an animated form. It's a different, you know, tiny little cell. That's the body. That cell changes, becomes this incredibly complicated cellular form. It's, as far as the citta goes, it's the same thing. Citta doesn't do eyes and hair and teeth. It just does embodiment. Right? Embodiment is embodiment whether you've got one leg, two legs or no leg. It's still embodied. Whether you lose a hand, go bald, go blind, you're still embodied. So this embodiment sense is prior to any sensory apparatus gets added to it. Yeah. So the citta can recognize that. It's its first guideline, you know, holding that steady. And then we can allow the felt senses to arise. And it's rather like, I'm using this image, the steady being like the rope on the bucket. When you descend into the well, you don't just chuck the bucket down the well and say, oh, feel what I feel. Feeling's good for, you know, just be with the feeling. No, you say, you lower the bucket on a rope to say, okay, this much, I can feel this much. I've still got the rope, still there. How is that? Okay. Can I stay steady? If the bucket's going upside down, it's time to pull up. You keep the rope, so it's, no, no, that's a bit too much right now, and then descending, and then, okay. And then if we can get that, the citta acquires a great sense of confidence, as if you're trying to get a young child to swim. So I think some of our parents might have said, okay, get on my back, put your arms around my neck, and I'll go into the water, and you just hold on to me, and I'll swim while the little kid is on the back, you know, till you get confident, because you're with me. And then gradually you can feel, you know, you get used to being in the water with your mother or your father, and you can say, I'll just, you know, you can let them go. So the body acts like that, so the citta can rest on the body as it goes into these very watery states, fluid states, feeling and sense, and okay, there's that. Yeah. And we don't let go of that embodiment. Nor do we just only focus on that. We hold that in order to feel what's being felt. Now this process will actually by itself allow the citta to come to a stability and where its reactions and its fear and its agitation ceases. And it feels steady. Suddenly, we've actually found there is a water we can float in. And that's obviously for our own welfare. We feel comfortable. It's for the welfare of others, because from this state, I will not be producing reactions of righteousness, hatred, violence, nor will I be producing feelings of fear, dismay, disappointment. My heart will be steady. Therefore, what arises from it will be just, truthful, sagacious, loving, compassionate, equanimous, for the welfare of others. You know? And of course, the thing is that it can be just the health of your dog that's causing it. It's not necessarily some big global paradigm. It's just the fact your dog is dying can be extremely, you know, difficult to manage. So this covers it all, really. And if we can gain that robustness, certain other things become possible. We're no longer so interested in shaking our fists and rights and wrongs. We feel those as distasteful. We're also no longer interested in consumerism. We find it pointless and silly. We're no longer distracting ourselves or going into alcohol because we find that sickening. And so the overall health of the individual is going to lead to health in the social fabric. Yeah? And this is all that can be done. Because if the social fabric is healthy, the likelihood is the leaders are going to be healthy. Because the leaders have to arise from the social fabric that supports or allows them to be in that position. So this is the long story. But it happens to be the one that works. Because the rest of them seem to be, oh yes, we've solved it, until the defeated fight back, or the next war starts, the next conflict starts. But this is something you can do with even the problems with your next door neighbour, or you're having concerns over your teenage daughter, or your son's doing some crazy stuff. You use the same model to bring around your own health, for your own welfare, for the welfare of others. And it's a long picture, a long story, a long process that we do. We don't believe it suddenly can be a push a button, everything's going to get fixed. But this is a process that makes us strong, capable, rich and deep. And this is what our life is for. If we just can come through this human life stronger, more resilient, more endowed, and we've done some good, this is what we have the capacity to do. And we should not allow ourselves to be sickened and damaged by the craziness that we see around us. So offer this for your reflection today.